John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. Craig Simons is the author of the new book, Nimitz at War, Command Leadership from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay, a dramatic moment that is replayed again and again in debate at the U.S. Naval Academy and everywhere you read the book about the Pacific War. It Halsey's decision-making at the Battle of Leyte Gulf, but it doesn't stop there. This is a war. And in that war, the Fifth Fleet is going to again take over, and there are going to be landings at Guam. They're going to be They're going to be landings at Iwo Jima and Okinawa coming up in the new year. We're going to turn into 45. But before that, there's something that isn't about the Japanese, that isn't about the Americans. It's about nature. There's a typhoon in the middle of December 1944, and Bill Halsey again, who's given a chance again and again by Chester Nimitz to explain his excesses, again makes a decision that leads to the deaths of 800 sailors, the loss of three ships, damage to the fleet, this invincible Task Force 58. And the review board faults Halsey afterwards. And Nimitz travels out to meet Halsey and to talk about this at the time. Again, this gets complicated, Professor. It becomes almost as if Nimitz doesn't have a way of disciplining Halsey. Did Halsey take advantage of that?
I don't know that Halsey took advantage of it. In a way, Nimitz's attitude was let Halsey be Halsey. I mean, one of the things Nimitz liked about Halsey was his aggressive attitude. He could be counted on to push the envelope, to go after the enemy as ferociously as he possibly could. That's not always the right decision in every operational circumstance, but often it is. And for those circumstances, Nimitz wanted to be able to give Halsey his leash. So when Halsey is ordered to support MacArthur's landing on the island of Mindoro in the Philippines, he says, well, yes, I'm going to do that. But first, I have to refuel my fleet. The fleet has to be constantly refueled. And logistics in this war are a huge problem because, of course, all the oil has to come from California. So he gives a fleet rendezvous for the ships to refuel. And it happens to coincide with a major typhoon. And Halsey keeps trying to maneuver to get around. He's reluctant to go further away from the Philippines because then he won't be able to get back to support the landing. So in the end, that turns out to put the fleet in even greater jeopardy. And he loses, as you say, three ships, damage to many others, hundreds of others, the loss of 800 lives. It's like a major defeat, only it's a typhoon. And it's because Halsey was too stubborn to say, well, I've got to get out of the way. And he was stubborn because he was eager to get back in the fight. Now, from Nimitz's point of view, his motives are admirable, even if his decision was foolish in the end. But another factor here for Nimitz is that by now, in late 1944 and into 1945, Halsey is practically an icon of the American public. He's been on the cover of Life and Time. He's quoted in the newspaper all the time. He's the guy who's going to beat the Japanese. He's going to ride the emperor's white horse through the streets of Tokyo. To get rid of him now would be a blow to American morale, and applying calculated risk, which produces the greater benefit to winning the war, Nimitz decided keeping Halsey, in spite of mistakes he may have made, is the better decision.
Nimitz is overwhelmed by delegations arriving in Honolulu, so he makes a very good decision. I'm going to move closer to the battle. And he makes a decision to go to Guam. The Seabees build him what appears to be a complex, and his whole staff moves to Guam up on the side of a hill looking west to the battle, which is now going to be at Iwo Jima and Okinawa. This is the arsenal of democracy at work. They show up one day, it's a tropical island. The next day, it's got movie theaters and Betty Grable. Wonderful. However, Nimitz is also commanding these difficult personalities, and we need to take into account some of them now. Iwo Jima. Iwo Jima first. Iwo Jima is a small rock. The Japanese army have now come up with a tactic that we first saw at Tarawa, which is to die in place, requiring the Marine Corps to dig them out day after day, week after week, with enormous casualties. One way, however, that strikes the Marine commanders is that the Navy is not providing adequate preparation fire. And I believe this happened with Iwo Jima. Is that right, Professor? They accused.
That is correct. That is correct. There is an argument whether whether more naval gunfire support over a longer period of time and even more shells would have made much of a difference is, quite frankly, unlikely. But the Marines felt, or at least the Marine commanders, felt that they had been abandoned to a certain extent. They asked for 10 days of heavy naval gunfire support prior to the landing. They got 3. But on the other hand, the Army Air Force planes had dropped 76 days worth of bombs all over that rock in the middle of the Pacific. And it's not clear, given the Japanese defenses, they were dug deeply into the volcanic rock, whether additional naval gunfire support would have made much of a difference. But it does exacerbate the sense of rivalry. Is that the right word? That maybe the Navy isn't supporting the Marines as much as they should. I think that's probably an unfair argument. But given the Marine losses on Iwo Jima, it's easy to see why they would try to look for a reason why their losses were so great. And the real reason is, as you point out, the new Japanese tactic, instead of launching these sacrificial bonsai charges, instead went down deep into the ground and said to the Marines, come in and get me. And that's costly.
Chester Nimitz makes a trip all the way back to Washington. He gets to watch. I believe this is when he attended his daughter's wedding. It's wonderful. He has a very strong family relationship, and they all work very well together. His son is a decorated commander in the submarine force, and he's given the Navy Cross, a very successful father. He meets with FDR, and he's shocked at what the president looks like. Does he convey that to anyone besides his wife, Catherine, in his letters?
No, he may have said something to Sock McMorris, his chief of staff. If so, that has not survived. We do know he mentioned it to his wife, Catherine, because about half of those letters have survived. So we're aware of that. But he has met FDR several times. He knew him before the war, obviously. And during that, and then, of course, that famous visit in Hawaii when they spent several days together. And now he sees him in 1945, and he is shocked by how the president has aged. He has a gray pallor. His hand visibly shakes. He's still witty. He's still charming. He still laughs. But he physically looks like he is declining.
Chester Nimitz returns to Guam. Okinawa, population of 500,000, 75,000 Japanese soldiers to die in place. That is the plan. So the U.S. Navy now has 17 carriers. This is Task Force 58. 8 fast battleships. I write down these statistics because it's overwhelming. The Japanese Empire is now fighting on suicidally. Led by a junta, military junta, around the emperor. And there is no possibility of victory. There is, in fact, just death. And that leads to the weapon that is invented first in November and now comes in waves, the kamikazes. And as I understand it, Professor, from your reporting from Nimitz's point of view, there is no solution to the kamikazes except for to disperse, use as much of air power as we can to defeat them on their way in. But the losses are ferocious, and all of their ships are capital ships. Even Spruance's Indianapolis is badly damaged by the kamikazes.
Yes, that's all true. You know, Chester Nimitz gave a speech at the Naval War College after the war in 1946 when he was invited to come talk to the students there about the war in the Pacific. And he was praising the War College curriculum for how they anticipated almost all of the things that they would subsequently encounter in the Pacific. And he said, you know, all the things we faced, from amphibious operations to naval battles, all of those things we had anticipated through our studies here at the War College. All but one, and that one was the kamikaze. So, yes, the introduction of the kamikaze, the desperate idea that, well, we don't have many trained pilots, we don't have the ability to go out and drop a bomb on a target and get back again, but if we turn the airplane into a bomb and that pilot is willing to sacrifice himself, we can inflict enough damage on the Americans that they will still think about opening negotiations for a compromise solution. It's a truly desperate gambit. But it did result in horrifying losses, more than 30 major warships, more than three sunk, more than 300 damaged, thousands of lives lost. So the kamikaze tactic, if you throw morality out entirely, is operationally effective and terrifying. But even that is not enough.
Spruance is exhausted. Nimitz decides to relieve him in place outside of supporting Okinawa on May 27th with Halsey. So the 5th Fleet becomes the 3rd Fleet. Same ships, different commanders. There's another typhoon, the June 3rd typhoon. And again, Halsey makes a strange decision. Does this have any more explanation than the first typhoon, Professor?
It's the same explanation. And it's not one. I mean, you could say, you know, the old joke about fool me once. But here again, he makes almost the same decision. To get out of the way of the typhoon, he has to go further away from the targets that he wants to attack. And he's unwilling to do that because he's so aggressive, he can't wait to get back to the fight. But it leaves his ships, or many of his ships, in the path of that typhoon. And again, there are terrible losses. Ships sunk, men killed, planes lost. The investigating group says, no forgiveness. He should be dismissed completely out of the Navy. And Nimitz steps in and says, think about what impact that would have on the war effort to fire arguably the most popular commander still fighting in the war, because by now, of course, Germany's been defeated. At this moment, it's just not so. It may be just, but it won't help the cause. And so he says, no, we'll let that go. Again, and the guy who takes the fall is John McCain's grandfather, John Slew McCain, who is blamed for leaving the ships, even though he had asked Halsey, can I move the ships? And Halsey said no. McCain takes the rap, and that was unfortunate.
The book is Nimitz at War, Command Leadership from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. When we come back, blockade or the bomb? I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.